You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 12th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am back. As you can tell, still not 100%. I don't have some type of sinus infection or plague, pestilence. However, I am here, and happily so, and joining me on this somewhat casual, rainy Friday in New York City is Mr. Cliff Schechter of Cliff Schechterville. And also on the program today, ostensibly to recommend a movie to me, my old friend David Cross. From David Crossistan, who will be with us later in the program. And also on today's program, great sound of Senator Warren handing it to OCC banking regulators, who have not only provided a pittance in a mortgage fraud settlement, national mortgage fraud settlement. Not only did they pay private contractors who were part of the initial fraud in these mortgage fraud settlements more money to evaluate how much of a pittance they were going to give to the victims of this fraud, but now they're also sort of saying, well, we may or may not release the information that we have collected in terms of this fraud, because God forbid private victims get a hold of this information and use it in lawsuits against the banks. I mean, it's just stunning. Yeah. Japan looks like now will sign on to the TPP. We have congressmen claiming that we saw what happened to the Hutu and the Tutsis in Rwanda, and we cannot therefore have a national registry of guns.
I mean, think about it.
Oh, no, I don't even have to think about it. I saw Red Dawn, and anybody who didn't and is living in the sort of delusion that we can get by. Also, more about the chain CPI. This is going to come as a shock to no one. But, I mean, supposedly it's coming to a shock to the White House. I don't even believe that. That the Republican Party is now criticizing and claiming they're going to run against Democrats in 2014 because of cuts to Social Security. We will talk about that and more with Cliff and not David Cross. But first, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter.
I'm out of control. Every time
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, Cliff Schechter. But before we can get to Cliff Schechter, we have to, of course, play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, it's Cliff Schechter from LibertasLLC.com speaking to us live, or partially live, I guess, from Las Vegas, Nevada.
I'm sort of alive, you could say that. I am speaking to you from Las Vegas, the place where this morning they handed out $1,000 chips to every person who came to this conference with their name on it, and I just took Sam's for myself.
Cliff is at the... Mass Torts conference that I generally go to, but have skipped this year because of the recent birth of my child. And I must have anticipated that I'd be this sick. I mean, if I was in Vegas right now, it would be a disaster. I've missed 2 days this week because of illness, which I never do.
I think that's probably because you're not here and your body is rejecting you.
That's possible. That's actually, that seems to be the most legitimate answer. I mean, that is the only thing I've heard so far that makes sense as to why I'm so sick.
I was going over jokes with Scott Milliken, Ring of Fire producer, and your friend, as well as Farron Cousins this morning, about the various ways that I could make fun of you this morning for not being here. But I'm going to be nice and not do it because I'm a huge fan.
Way to make fun of me. I mean, nobody's more upset about it than I am.
Do you know that we lost our table? Usually, folks, Sam is such a big shot, we get this free table in the exhibition area, which sort of becomes our gathering center for the non-lawyers at the conference, which equals about 15 of us all who are either make lots of noise in the radio or do political work or a combination thereof. And they sold that space to somebody else. I'm a man without a home. I've been standing for days.
Well, there you go. Well, all right. So let's move to this. I believe today we are seeing some piece of legislation being voted upon now. Just a little backstory for folks. I don't know if you're still working for them, but in the past, of course, you've been heavily involved in the gun safety issue with mayors against illegal guns. And today in the Senate, I believe we're seeing some legislation that is supposedly going to be voted upon. Is that correct?
That is correct. And as I like to at least go off on one or two complete tirades on your show, I might as well start off by saying that no matter what happens in the future, what they do, I don't care, you know, if they suddenly become socialists, Mark Pryor and Mark Begich, the cowardly Marks from Alaska and Arkansas, who filibustered their own parties already, compromise bill that isn't as strong as we would want it to be, are both dead to me.
All right, so back up and catch me up here, because I've been half out of it because of this illness I've had. At the beginning of the week, it looked like, I mean, it was shifting day to day as to whether or not the bill would be filibustered, whether or not it would get a vote. And then I vaguely, in some haze of sort of feverish cold that I had, I heard Joe Manchin and Toomey getting together. And I thought I was having some type of like bizarre Alice in Wonderland dream. Just walk through the week for us a little bit, if you could.
It is kind of a bizarre, it would seem that way, because I have to admit I didn't fully expect it either. But what essentially Joe Manchin, you know, credit where credit is due, because I remember when he did that campaign commercial back when he took out his rifle and shot a hole in the EPA bill.
Right.
Yay, another one of those Democrats. So glad to have him. But like Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, who's another example, and Mark Warner, some of these people actually seem to have a human side to them, believe it or not to be complete cyborgs, and seem to be changed by things. And there was for being from West Virginia, you have to look at it and say, for Manchin running away from this bill and just embracing the NRA's talking points as an A-rated NRA guy would have been the easy thing to do. And yet, even he's been, they were involved in negotiations. It was him and Chuck Schumer, who's always been very pro gun control, and Mark Kirk, who is by far the most moderate Republican in the Senate right now, who's always got an F from the NRA. And they had Tom Coburn originally, who himself also another crazy right winger who seemed to actually see what happened because there's no motivation for him from Oklahoma to get involved. But he still seems to believe in this paranoid fantasy that there's going to be a national registry, which is ridiculous. And sadly, people that are sometimes allies, who I'm not going to spare my criticism of, and the ACLU came out and helped that argument by trying to claim that in this new bill we'd be looking at potentially some sort of keeping of records, which is in fact false, and the ACLU should come out and apologize for that, for making incorrect statements and hurting this bill's chances. But I don't want to digress.
What is the reality of that? I mean, there's not going to be like records kept in some vault in D.C. waiting, you know, for the purge.
No,
that, of course, would come.
Federally registered, federally licensed dealers right now keep these records. You know, any records of anybody that when somebody they do the records when somebody passes a background check, anybody who passes it, records are destroyed within 24 hours. This stuff does not go to the federal government by law. They can't keep a federal database, and by law, for the people that will now be added to this, which are private sellers at gun shows as well as gun sales on the internet, which is a huge source of gun trafficking. Those are areas that will be added. So neighbor-to-neighbor sales and things like – or not sales, but some – let's say you give a gun to your neighbor. That's not going to be covered under this.
Right.
And I think it should be. But that's the compromise. That's where we're at. And so it's bad enough we have to listen to Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. But I have to hear people – and I'm sorry. Again, I'm not experienced. I'm on a tirade right now. I have to hear whatever imbecile at the ACLU doesn't understand how to read – and doesn't understand apparently how to look at a bill and understand it, has to come out and say that this thing is going to lead to – for the new people added on the internet and the new people who are going to be covered under this and the new people who are private sellers at gun shows, that some of that could lead to a registry. So first thing I'll tell all of you listening is why don't you call the ACLU and tell them to shut up and get their facts right and stop trying to undermine what will be the biggest step forward in the safety of our children perhaps in 20 years if we can get this thing passed. And that's the line that Mitch McConnell and people like him are pushing forward too. This national registry. That's what Wayne LaPierre is saying. That's who the ACLU has climbed into bed with. So it is incorrect.
Now,
right?
Isn't this though? I mean, to be fair, full disclosure, I did not see the remake, but in the first version of Red Dawn, we know what happened, right? I mean, the Cuban Russian generals went to the gun stores and found out who bought the guns and then confiscated them and put them into the camps. So are you suggesting that that was some type of fiction?
No, I think you're correct about that. I do have to admit that often in society like that, you know, when Harrison Ford had to hunt down the replicants in Blade Runner.
Right.
He found out which replicants had their guns registered by the new gun registry.
So you're one of these guys who think that just because, you know, that Harrison Ford can do it, but that somehow our federal government's not going to do it.
Right. I mean, how else could you catch Rutger Hauer? I mean, he was in great shape. You know, he was doing flips all over. I mean, those replicants are some kick-ass guys.
Right.
I mean, so, yes, in that future world, if we do become the Blade Runner world, perhaps it will happen. In this world – I would like to say to Wayne LaPierre, the NRA, sadly the ACLU, Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, also known as Joe McCarthy, and every other liar about this, federal law prohibits this. So what you're looking at here is 68 in the end, just to go forward, because remember Harry Reid didn't pass that whole filibuster reform thing?
Right.
This is just to be able to debate the bill. 68 senators, including how many was it? 16 Republicans. And some surprises, I have to admit. I mean, Coburn voted on the right side of this to go forward and have this debate after kids were literally slaughtered in Newtown. So let's talk about this the way it is, and with assault weapons that blew parts of their bodies off. And we decided we should go forward and talk about the ways we can best protect the citizens of this country through passing reasonable legislation to improve public health. I mean, that's in the end what we're talking about here, and. a number of Republicans had played a constructive role. Now, when Tom Coburn started getting freaked out that this, you know, maybe this could be a registry, I don't know, although he did vote the right way in the end, Senator Manchin, to be given credit, went to Pat Toomey, who is a Club for Growth guy who's always been known as a staunch conservative, but he's one of that class. We always hear about what's coming up in 2014. 2016, there are going to be a lot of Republicans that won in swing states or states that lean Democratic, Kelly Ayotte and Pat Toomey and others, who are going to be up in a presidential year, and you know where their states are going to go for a Democratic presidential candidate likely, and they're going to have to go against the tide.
Right.
Did Pat Toomey do this because he's a good human being, or did he do it for that reason? I don't know. Could be a little. Could be
who
that
cares?
He saw the light. Could be. I don't really care. That's exactly right. So he joined in with Joe Manchin, and that gave a lot of cover to Republicans and Democrats from so-called, you know, from not so-called, but from red states who are scared of this, even though every poll will tell you, even in, you know, I can name a state, Arkansas, 84% support universal background checks. Oklahoma, 87% support. I mean, this is something that you can't find a state where it's under 80%.
And my sense is that most people actually believe, regardless of where they are on any type of gun control, most people believe this is already in place. I mean, there was a poll that came out.
That's the biggest problem.
There was a poll that came out at the beginning of the week that showed that people who say we want less gun, you know, we don't need more gun control, we just need our laws to be in place, already think that there is really an extensive background check in terms of the depth and the breadth. In other words, it covers as many different transactions. They already think that's in place, but in fact, it is not. We're almost 50-
right. Well, two things. Common sense tells you this. It's you know. If you're thinking to yourself, would you actually allow someone to buy a 50 caliber rifle that can take down a helicopter or a small airplane without a background check? Would you? What would you think most people, just using common sense, their answer would be? Of course not. Right. How would you? Would you? You know? Would you let someone buy a shoulder held missile? I mean, so would you let them buy a 50 caliber rifle that can do that? No. Would you let them buy the type of assault weapon, a Bushmaster, that did in Newtown, allow this guy to shoot 154 shots in like no time? No, you wouldn't. So most people can't, they believe it already exists because common sense would tell you that in any country that had any common sense, it would already exist. Not to mention you've had 20 years of NRA propaganda where they have suppressed any and all studies on guns and violence, you know, at the CDC, at the ATF sharing information publicly and everything, you know, when their big line about, we just want the guns to be enforced on the books. That's the biggest lie of all. They've not allowed anybody to run the ATF since 2007. They won't allow anybody to get through the Senate. They hamstring their budget. They don't allow them to share information with other federal agencies. I mean, they do everything they can to make sure the laws are not enforced. I mean, there's corrupt dealers out there that sell guns out the back door to criminals and knowingly do it, but they've made sure to get measures passed that you can't force these guys to do an inventory so that they can tell, so that you know what guns are there and aren't there, these gun dealers. I mean, this is what the NRA does. So, of course, most people aren't fully aware of what our laws are because they've suppressed information, and common sense would tell you, of course, that we would have these laws. But, you know, even taking that aside, again, you're right, Sam. I mean, look, in many states, 90%+, overall nationally, 92% support this. We actually found in polling that was done by Mayors Against Illegal Guns, there are one or two districts in places like Chris Smith's district in New Jersey where 100% supported this. 100%. Have you ever seen a poll where 100% of people supported anything?
No.
Not even so
like
so,
not even if you were to say, are interterrestrials fake? You'd still get like 6% going, I don't know. No, that's crazy.
Exactly. I mean, anywhere I take this right now, I'd start going into like the realms of porn or something, and I'd probably get myself in trouble.
Right.
So let's just say 100% of people don't ever almost support anything. You know, so but yet these guys, the cowards that some of them are, still feel like they need cover. They're given it when you've got a conservative like Pat Toomey, when Coburn supports this bill going forward, and others, most of who you consider the semi-moderate to moderate Republicans, even though they basically don't exist anymore, like Susan Collins and Mark Kirk, supported this thing going forward. But you had a number of the Republicans that didn't. You know, the ones that threatened the filibuster originally, the crazy crew, Rand Paul, who, you know, I guess wants to stop drones but wants people instead to shoot each other with assault weapons, and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee from Utah, who's just an insane person. And sadly, with all of that, most of the Democrats, almost every Democrat did the right thing, but Mark Begich of Alaska and Mark Pryor of Arkansas, even with 80-whatever% to 90% of the people in their states supporting these measures, decided to join the NRA, the black helicopter crowd, and everyone else, and give bogus reasons. So Mark Pryor also being one of – to talk about those two senators for a second, Mark Pryor is also one of three who refuses to come out for gay marriage, who's anti-choice. So think about that if you're going to waste any of your time trying to get Mark Pryor reelected in Arkansas this upcoming election, because I think if there's a time to show that you're willing to stand up to terrible Democrats, he'd be the one. And Mark Begich, who's just an out-and-out liar because he used to be a member when he was the mayor of Anchorage of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. And then suddenly he realized the organization wasn't doing what he wanted when he ran for the Senate in Alaska, and now he's gone all the way over to the other side, showing that he has absolutely no principles, and basically might as well just be a Mitt Romney clone.
No principles. It's just that his principle is just, I've got to be the biggest panderer possible.
That's exactly right. And you know, let's talk, principle. I suppose you're right. It's something to aspire to.
I don't know if you want to aspire to it, but I mean, it is. You know, it is for some people the Northern Star, right? I mean, you need some.
But in Washington, though, it's almost like winning the Grammy. You know what I mean? So, he can get the award and get up and thank everyone. You know, maybe make the case and say, look, I used to belong to an organization that's pushing for this bill and be an active member of that organization, and now I'm now working with the NRA, the exact opposite organization, to help get kids killed.
Okay.
So if anybody shouldn't be able to win that Grammy, I would think he would.
All right, let's get into the specifics of the bill at this point. Okay, so the bill basically requires background checks. It closes the gun show loophole. Is that right?
It covers gun shows and internet sales.
Right.
Adds them to now the federally licensed dealers. So it's not the universal.
So you can still meet somebody in a parking lot.
A lot closer.
You can still meet somebody in a parking lot, right? You can still meet somebody in a parking lot, and they open up their trunk and they say, "Here we go. You're okay." Is that right? Or
that. That's the part that I'm trying to understand. I don't think you can do that, but I think it allows transfers between neighbors. So if you're a lunatic and you happen to be lucky enough to live next to somebody and befriend them, then I suppose that's okay.
And family members too, is my understanding. So it's basically the vast majority of private transfers. We don't know exactly how that's written at this point.
That's right.
Now, there's also, my understanding is, and there's going to be amendments, but in addition to that, in the bill, there's also a increased punishments for straw purchases and a lowering of the bar. In other words, and this is going to be something that I think somebody's going to try to amend, but you don't, when you purchase for somebody else, you don't necessarily have to know, according to the legislation as it's framed now, that they wouldn't pass a background check. You just have to know that you're buying it for other people, essentially, right? I mean, that's sort of the deal.
And that's what makes it much more enforceable. That's exactly right.
And
so that's gun trafficking in the end, and we have no strong federal standard on that because, of course, the NRA has fought that too.
And that's important because that's the way, you know, when you go and then, well, I bought 20 guns, and that transaction, theoretically, there should be some record of. And then you take them and give them or sell them to people who end up committing a crime and would have failed a background check. At least there's some measure of potential accountability through that string of purchases, right? I mean, that would theoretically make you more hesitant to make that sale to that individual.
Right. And look, this stuff works. You know, these guys try to carve out this universe where gun laws work differently than everything else. And they don't. I mean, when you make it clear and when there's clear laws in place, most people, there are exceptions to that, try to avoid going to prison.
Right. You're making it harder.
Simple.
You're making it harder for people all through the you're making the cost benefit analysis throughout the process different for each individual who partakes in that, and that that ends up putting a gun into somebody's hands. And you also, and because you're rejiggering the cost benefit analysis for all those different players, you're inevitably making it harder for the gun to travel through a system. That's simple physics. And when we debate, you know, issues like, you know, whether or not more people are going to take drugs if we decriminalize drugs, the real issue is ultimately a cost benefit, a wider cost benefit analysis. And for those people who think that there is the wider cost benefit analysis, it's, you know, always this slippery slope, right? That's going to lead us to, a Red Dawn scenario.
Well, democracy is a slippery slope by definition. I mean, and that's the whole thing. It's like we sit there and we pass laws. Anytime you make something, you know, illegal, that is a partial measure, could you make something more illegal? Could you? Of course you could. I mean, we try to find the common ground, the areas that keep the most people safe, that provide for the most stability and security, and give people the most privacy, and we try to find that balance, and we try to pass those laws. So, as I said, somehow people, these guys, what they successfully have done when they had nobody pushing back at them for the most part for 20 years, is have taken the gun debate and made it like that debate is different than everything else. Oh, if we make guns illegal, people, you know, if we do background checks at gun shows, people will just go get them in other places.
Right.
So, you know, there's no point in doing that. Also, you know, along that line of thinking, there's really no point in making rape or murder illegal because some people actually still choose to do it. I mean, it's obviously just stupid and it makes no sense. Yes, some people will find other ways to get guns. Plenty of others, like the 1.8 million in recent years that have been caught using the background check system for federally licensed dealers, we will catch a lot more people this way. And other people will do the cost benefit analysis, as you said, and not try to do it. It's like any other public health, any other issue, or really any other issue of law. You try to find numerous different ways to get at it and prevent bad things from happening.
And since going forward on this, now, that's all that's in the bill at this point. We anticipate some amendments being brought up to ban assault weapons, to ban high-capacity magazines. There's a good chance, obviously, that those amendments are going to fail. What is your sense of the chance that something is going to pass and that something is going to be worth doing something? In other words, you know, there was an analysis in the Washington Post. I can't remember which one of those guys it was, who was basically saying, like, you know, there's a danger in passing a legislation that is really anemic because then critics say, look, you know, we knew you passed this gun. It didn't do anything. It didn't help at all, which was.
And you can bet I've thought about that because you can bet the NRA, they'll be lining up to do that.
Of course.
Doesn't help.
Of course. You know. So what is your assessment, or can you make that assessment until you see the final bill?
I need to see the final bill, but my assessment overall is, look, I mean, again, I view this issue the way I view when it comes to, you know, tobacco, or the way I view drunk driving, or the way I view any other public health issue, which is you need to come at it from 20 different angles to solve it. And something positive is better than nothing. And so the thing that the people that say that, and I realize the NRA is going to do that, but the NRA right now does that.
Right.
Even without these background checks, they say, look, we've got enough laws in the books and they don't work. So, you know, they're going to do that no matter what. That's their game. So are the people that are in bed with them, like the Ted Cruzes of the world and the Mark Begiches and Mark Pryors. So to me, that's not a strong enough reason not to pass something that will positively change things. And of course, you know where I stand on this. I want an assault weapons ban. You know, I want there to be a magazine limit. Hell, I support what Maryland just did in supporting fingerprinting for people to buy handguns. I'd lower the from 10 down to 7 like New York did in the bill they passed in terms of how many bullets can be in a magazine. Hell, I'd lower it down to 5. Maybe, you know, I mean, what I want and what's going to happen are two different things. So I need to be realistic, which I'm trying to be, in saying what prevents more harm, what is worth passing. To me, the bill that is as it exists right now, because of my knowledge of how many illegal sales go on or how many sales to criminals and the mentally ill go on over the internet, that go on at gun shows where it's very easy to just go and get it from a private seller, that this will make a positive difference if this can get through. Right. And so, as well as the gun trafficking part of this, so I have to be in favor of it. It also, politically, it's a blow to the NRA because they don't want it. And if you can beat the NRA and show people you can beat the NRA, as we've now done in a number of states, that's a big statement too.
And what is its chances in the House if it gets through the Senate?
I'm going to go right now probably with about 50-50.
Right.
I think the biggest shot, the biggest chance we've got in the House is that there are a number of Republicans. If you just look at the Republicans from districts in New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, you'd find a dozen that are from either a mixture of urban, suburban districts that are overwhelmingly much even more, I mean, not that you can be much higher than 92%, but what I was telling you about Chris Smith's district, you start seeing things like 97% in favor. There's going to be a lot of Republicans who are going to be pressured. Peter King has already signed on to this. He's from one of those districts and is lobbying fellow members and pushing for it. It's all in going to be how many priors and baggages are there. You know, will you lose Matheson and Barrow and some of the scummy blue dogs who you tend to lose on anything that has any positive impact on this country? How many of those guys can you keep in check? Because I do think you can win about two dozen Republicans over that are in those kinds of districts. As I said, they're mostly cloistered in the Northeast, but there's a number of them also in parts out west and other areas, you know, the Great Lakes states, Minneapolis suburbs and others where there are people who are in districts that are clamoring for this. So right. I think there's a good chance.
All right, interesting.
But
right,
also, so it can be undermined, and Boehner can stop it.
Right.
And, I mean, there's a plenty that can get in the way, so we need to be realistic about it.
All right, I want to briefly touch on this. I want to talk, obviously, about the president's budget and what we're hearing. But before we get there, you have written extensively. I think, didn't you meet your wife when you were working against McConnell?
Oh, my God. Embarrassing and yet true.
Yes.
In the great state of Kentucky in 2002.
Mitch McConnell, there's one good thing we can say about Mitch McConnell. It brought Cliff Schechter true love in many respects. Mitch McConnell.
And you think that because when I look at Mitch McConnell, I think of nothing but love.
So now it's coming out that his office may have been bugged by, I don't know who these people are, but.
This progress, I don't know the details. I mean, yeah, I know we want to just touch on this quickly. I just wanted to make one key overall point. I don't know if they bugged it or not.
Right. All right. So we'll deal with that part about it in the coming days because this story is still breaking. But it's been amazing to me that McConnell has been able to make it all about that. But go ahead.
Well, that's the point I wanted to make, Sam, which is McConnell – his rise, I wrote a piece on this for the Washington Monthly in 2004, his rise to the Senate, he's one of the people give Newt Gingrich credit when in the House and others, that changed the tenor, that changed what was acceptable and wasn't acceptable, that all this was the old standing, you know, kind of rules, you could say, but also the culture of the place changed. He was the one that was willing to essentially went to a group called of big corporations who were supporting a soft money ban, the Committee of Economic Development, and basically on NRSC, National Republican Senatorial Committee letterhead, extorted them and threatened them and their businesses if they didn't stop supporting a soft money ban and keep giving money. He took this game to a new level of shamelessness. He has none. So the thing that people need to understand about him is he will divert attention in any way. And you'll see these patterns if you look. He's akin to someone like Karl Rove. Remember when the video, the tape of the debate, debate practice was delivered to Gore's headquarters in 2000. And then the big thing was, did Al Gore steal, you know, George Bush's debate prep? And there was, and it ended up becoming a big negative story where Al Gore got hit. Well. And there was an earlier story with Karl Rove in Texas where he claimed somebody planted a bug in his office right before a debate.
Right.
And that was a way he was able – this is what these guys do. They play the media. And back 6 years ago, which I can't believe, maybe some people in Kentucky are reporting it, but seem to have forgotten, in his closest race in a while, he only won by 5 points in the end against Bruce Lunsford, who is a self-funding multimillionaire. He claimed that a listening device had been put on his podium during to tape him illegally during the debate. And so after a debate where he got his clock cleaned, he instead was able to divert the story to not be that he got his clock cleaned, but that Bruce Lunsford was trying to listen in on him. This is what he does. There's a pattern there. All right.
Well, and I will say this about the story that is breaking, and I don't know many details out of it, but there's some organization, Kentucky Progress or something, that seems to be really just made of like two or three people that showed up about 5 months ago. They're the ones who did those offensive tweets, I guess, about his wife that he keeps referencing. And that they have been responsible for like three or four different scandals over the past four or five months that all and very obviously ended up making McConnell some type of victim in the media. It all just sounds – now, it's quite possible there could be just three or four idiots who are just –
they could be just the most
really,
incompetent people, but yes. When
really
start
bad
putting that together.
At what they do. Or it could be, you know, like, hey, you know, let's find three or four idiots, fund them, and let them just, you know, maybe this will work out. I mean, there's, you know, it doesn't have to be that these three or four people are McConnell operatives posing as some type of liberal group. It can just be like, you know, if I was to go out and, I don't know, fund, if I wanted to embarrass you know, some Tea Partiers, all it would take is, you know, sending a check for $20,000 to, you know, one of these guys and say, go to town, my man, and
right.
then just let what happens happens. So I don't know.
I'm suspicious. That's all I'm saying. I don't know who they are. I've got a lot of contacts in Kentucky. Obviously, I've been on the road. I'm now that this pattern has shown up, I'm going to start asking more questions and trying to find out. But there's no doubt, because this is exactly the type of thing Mitch McConnell would do and has done in the past.
Interesting.
That's what you will want people need to know, that there's no stone he'll leave unturned. There's no fake group he won't create. This is, you know, he is a sociopath, much like Karl Rove. Doesn't worry about the consequences. Doesn't think about breaking the law. Doesn't, you know, he's always gotten away with it, and he wouldn't start worrying about it.
People have
now.
To remember,
I mean, this is the kind of guy that if he were born in Cuba, he'd be working along Fidel Castro's side.
This is not done in a vacuum. I mean, McConnell's looking at probably his worst reelect numbers he's ever had, I think, probably as senator. And
that's right.
So his polling numbers, I mean, this is to the extent that there's desperation time, this is desperation time for him. All right, listen, we only have about 5 minutes left. So we got to talk about this. We talk about it ad nauseum. Supposedly the White House is shocked by this. We're seeing Bonner. Come out.
It's like LaPierre. You have to get the French pronunciation correct.
Bonner, he of French-Canadian background, is supposedly at odds with the NRCC chair, Greg Walden, the NRCC being the National Republican Congressional Campaign Chair. Bonner says that he supports chain CPI, in other words, these cuts to Social Security. But Greg Walden is going on and on about how Republicans can't wait to run against
That's right.
President Obama.
I happened to catch that interview with Walden the other day because here, in the, you know, 3 hours earlier out here, I was getting up to get ready for this for the conference, and it was whatever it is, 9-10 o'clock on the East Coast, and Sexy Wolf Blitzer was doing the interview with him, and it just was the least shocking thing in the world. I was waiting until one of them came out and did exactly what you and I and anybody else with half a brain predicted they would do, which was to say he's balancing the budget on the backs of seniors.
Yes,
it's shocking.
Of course. They did this with Medicare. They're going to do it with this. There's no doubt. Now, there's two things that strike me about this, and now it's being reported that Bonner will not, when asked, like, are you going to meet with Walden and basically tell him to shut this down because it runs against the policy that you guys are advocating? He just basically laughed.
You mean shut that whole thing down?
And look,
what you, mean.
You know what? To think anything other than that would be the response, I think, is incredibly naive. We all knew this. And the real question here is that, you know, This, in some ways, vindicates what we said, but we all knew this. I'm convinced the White House must have known this as well. What's weird to me is, isn't this going to send a signal to Democrats in the House and the Senate, like, no way we can do this now? Do the Republicans think that, are they just looking, I mean, what is to prevent, and it seems like we're already starting to see this, Democrats from running somewhat against President Obama? I mean,
but nothing. I mean, except for threats from the Obama people that for committees to withhold money or whatever else they can hold over them. But I mean, in the end, I'm not sure which party, and I shouldn't hold this against the congressional wing of the Democratic Party, although Harry Reid hasn't proved himself all that competent either. I'm not sure who's more incompetent at this point. Because if the White House didn't know this was going to happen, they're literally the stupidest people alive. I don't know how.
There's no way they didn't know that.
I assume they did know this was going to happen. And how did they see that turning out positively? When the polls came out that said 80-something% of people overall are against this, when the left unified against them and screamed about it, and when their congressional members started getting threats from people that were scared of it, how did they see that working out well? And if they really do want a majority to work with on what they claim are their priorities, like guns and immigration and maybe something on climate and other things, depressing your base for a midterm election. Let's see, did that happen in 2010?
Now,
I'm trying to remember.
I was going to read one piece from this Greg Sargent piece in the Washington Post. And, Greg Sargent is, one of these guys who's not necessarily, he's reporting. He's delivering all sides of this. And he says, this is what he writes in terms of like on the plus ledger, the he said, she said of this argument that's going back and forth amongst, people who are upset about this proposal and people who are not. And for what it's worth, some Dems I've spoken to believe they can win the argument over entitlements in spite of Obama's support for Change CPI, and that public perceptions that Dems are willing to compromise to solve problems and Republicans aren't is a net positive for them. So look at first of all,
and
this
that's
is,
what I think the White House thought, by
right,
the way.
And these are the advocates, and look how qualified that is. Some Dems think it may be a net positive. I mean, just imagine what the pitch is. You are a Democratic candidate, and you're running, and you're saying, "Hey, President, I disagree with President Obama about the Change CPI cuts to Social Security." But at least he's willing to negotiate and the Republicans aren't. And as far as me, what does he say? Does he say, I'm willing to negotiate and sell away Social Security, therefore validating the attacks that are coming from the Republicans? Or, it's completely muddled. It's just
right. To me, the part about looking reasonable and centrist, if these guys had any kind of an intelligent PR operation, would be to say, we are already offering much more in cuts than we're asking for in revenue.
Exactly.
And by the way, we're the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
That's already by far, and I don't consider that reasonable, I consider that stupid too, that during this time of when demographics are changing and the Republican Party has proven itself to be so inept, that you start making the affirmative argument that, there need to be more damn revenues than there need to be cuts, because government actually does stuff. And why don't we ask you thing by thing, Social Security, Medicare, the roads you drive on, and everything else, what the hell you want cut out of your life, and start taking it away from the abstract and start making the affirmative argument. But okay, they didn't do that. So, in the end, that's the quote-unquote reasonable part. To offer up Social Security, which every Democrat has run on, and many have won on, and when Democrats are in trouble, they go to the point of how Republicans have wanted to cut and destroy this program since the beginning of time. To tie yourself to that, again, that's what you need to look reasonable. It just tells me that people who I thought – had maybe learned something in the White House are still as dumb as they've been the entire first term.
I think it's probably a combination of things. The president clearly has been indicating at least he doesn't think it's good policy, but he's willing to make that compromise. And then all you're left with is this notion of if I take him at face value that it's not a policy he's pursuing, then really it's just you don't know how to do politics. You keep failing. The sequester is a failure of the administration. Right? Because we now know that they had the ability to defeat the Republicans in terms of the debt ceiling. We've seen that, right? They didn't realize it in 2011. We now know that the entitlement reform, the pursuit of the grand bargain, brought the sequester, which is now here. And now we're being told on the left that, like, you need to make this Sophie's choice. It's just, it's pathetic.
And just getting us into this ridiculous situation. And it's kind of funny. Obviously, the thing that you brought up about the gun legislation before, to me, seemed to end up being much more true in the stimulus legislation, which is you did something instead of nothing, and then they were able to blame that something as just spending and wasting money because you didn't do enough. And it's like, this has been this pattern that we had to go through, and it seemed like because of how they've been actually taking the gun argument around the country, which they never did with health care or the stimulus, right. It seemed like that they had learned a lesson, you know, because – and again – I just don't understand it. I mean, this should be – someday the historians will look back at this and be like, how to take a completely discredited opposition party, a terrible economy, and rising demographics in your favor, the ability to be the next FDR and turn it into a Grover Cleveland presidency.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're going to be – I just – you know, it's to me, these guys, I know they're all multimillionaires, so they're in this little bubble. But the fact that they all sat around in a room together and said, let's look reasonable – and we'll be the ones to offer to cut up to cut this program that is literally the best branding our party has, that we're tied to this program that everyone loves and has been so successful. It'd be like the Republicans getting together and running on, we're gonna get rid of the carried interest loophole.
Yeah,
that essentially be like that's the equivalent of what this is. Republicans saying we think we need to raise taxes on the wealthiest Americans and taking that across the country and running on that. I mean, it just it's unbelievable to me. And if they thought that this was going to make them seem reasonable, I don't know. They expected quite the blowback, but if they didn't, they're stupid. And if they did and they did it anyhow, they're stupid. So I'm really not sure what conclusion to come to with these people anymore.
No. I mean, I think there's probably a little bit of both. I think President Obama likes, you know, the idea of having David Brooks you know, give him praise, and likes the idea of not being perceived as, you know, dipping Social Security in amber as
well, then take David Brooks out to the Applebee's.
You know, yeah, but the bottom line is, this is not an effective political strategy, and it's also not effective policy. So it's a failure on both ends. But we are out of time.
Well, and if you're a Democrat, and you're going to take some hard votes for the administration on a number of controversial issues coming up, and they do this to you, does that make you more likely to stay with them on those other issues? It's just so stupid in every way.
Yes. All right, Cliffy, gotta go. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, I'm gonna go hit the tables for you. All right, buddy.
Yes. Put.
And then I'll complain to Scott that I lost money because I want to take up the role that you normally take up here.
Right. I was gonna say.
I'm kidding. I love you, Sam.
Good luck with that. No, well, you're not. You may be kidding, but you're telling the truth. All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye. All right, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, David Cross. Back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure.
I just told you before we do this that I had something personal to tell you before we just get into the whole.
Are you serious? Because I think I didn't hear that part, because when I say we're going to be on in 10 seconds, I don't have the ability to hear you for like.
Oh, all right. Well, never mind. All right, so let's do this. But then,
all right,
hang
well,
on,
that, we'll
so
take a break. Okay, after. Okay. We are back! Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the program David Cross. Hello, David.
Hey, man, before we do this, I got to run and take a dump real quick. Do I have 5 minutes? Maybe seven?
Bring the phone in there. Let's make this like an LBJ thing.
All right.
No?
Okay, what's going on?
All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program David Cross. Hello, David.
Hello. I don't. You said back to the program, but I don't believe I've actually been on the program before. So it'd be
you were here like a month ago.
Not sure about that.
No, I'm absolutely 100% sure. It was like maybe it was 6 weeks ago, maybe it was 2 months ago. I don't know, but you were here.
I'm doing this out of kind of a sense of charity, so I don't think I would do this twice. Let me check with my,
well, but you know what, maybe it was in 2012. So you were taking like the tax write-off then, and then you're taking it for 2013 now.
Yeah, I still don't.
Let's check. Can I get a producer to check and tell me when you were on last time, guys?
I'm checking right now.
Yeah, things move a little slowly here. With the
so what's going on? Are you in the city or are you upstate?
No, I'm in the city. I'm right. Yeah. No, I know. You know, last time we spoke,
January 4th.
It was January 4th, actually. So you may want to speak to your accountant about
that. That's right. That's right. It was the day after my mom's birthday. Right.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Right. Okay. That makes sense because we were taking my mom out to dinner and then I talked to you and okay, got it.
Wait, you know, you talked to me. Oh, so you took her out the day before, right? You always do this on the day after your mom's birthday, and then two or three, 4 months later, and 4 months and four, 8 days later.
Yeah, we do that. That's an annual thing. I've been doing that for about, I don't know, going on 35 years now, yeah.
Let me ask you. Now, I got a bunch of questions that I asked Twitter, you know, what questions to ask you, which is what you know you have to do. But before we get into that, I want to just – I got it because there's really not many people I can talk to about this, partially because I just don't have that many friends.
In all seriousness, you're kind of breaking up quite a bit. I don't know if there's anything you can do there.
There's nothing I can do about it, but you sound good. So and if you can understand me, then let's keep doing this.
Well, that's part of the problem is you're like I'm losing every other word. But I'll
– Really?
We'll do our best.
All right. Okay. You want me to try and call you back?
It might be for the best. Yeah.
I'll call you right back.
Okay. Bye.
I don't know why that happens. Sometimes,
something's going on. I have no idea. Some people say we're crystal clear. Some people have problems.
Weird.
Hello?
David, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's much better.
Oh, I don't know why that happens sometimes. But I guess that's just the nature of the beast. So
yeah. Oh, that's much better. Yeah. Okay.
So I went on Twitter and asked if the people had questions, and we'll get to that in a bit. But like I was saying, I want to ask you about this because I don't have that many people I can talk to about stuff like this or really anything.
Okay. Man, I'm sorry, Sam. You're really breaking up there.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Again?
It's almost like you're getting cut off in that kind of weird robotic underwater sounding way.
Okay, you want me to call you right back?
I guess should I call you or would that make a difference?
Yeah, why don't you call that number that showed up on your phone?
Okay, I'll do that.
I don't know what to say.
I'm not sure I believe him. This is a classic.
No, the funny thing is, though, yesterday when we had Samita on, she told us that we sounded like we were being auto-tuned.
Really?
So I guess that can be heard as underwater, robot underwater as well.
Yeah. Let's see. Gonna land a pizza. What was that? What was that ad? They I can't remember. Do I sound better?
God, no.
All right. You know what?
I don't know what the deal is.
I'm going to call you brother. On a different device. We'll try this one more time, David.
Wow,
I don't know what it is.
Up.
Now, where am I calling you from?
Jesus.
I'll call you right back.
All right.
Bye. Folks, we're going to have to cut some of this out during the...
kind of funny, actually. This is kind of...
this is
really entertaining.
This is the classic Mr. Show bit from...
Samina actually told me it got better.
Hello?
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
Oh, that's better. Okay.
That's better?
Yeah, way better. All right.
Now, here's the irony. He doesn't sound better. He actually sounds worse.
Really?
I mean, no, but you sound fine. You sound fine. I'm getting very specific about the audio quality here. Now, of course, ladies and gentlemen, David and I have just performed the classic I Can't Hear You Call Me Back bit from Mr. Show back in 83. You know, I still have some Mr. Show magnets, refrigerator magnets.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah, that's from our very first little party, I think.
Yeah, from Convention 96, yeah. I think it was. Like, I literally am standing on it. It's the picture that Amy Silver drew.
I think that would have been, like, mid, like, 94, 95, I think.
Yeah, I can't. I'm basically going to finance the production of this show by selling those babies on eBay. What do you think I could get for it? I mean, who's got one of those? Nobody, right? You probably don't have any.
I do not have them.
All right.
I think maybe my sister or my mom might have one, but that's about it.
All right. All right. So let's get back to the original point. So I have this little, you know, situation, not a big deal, but you know that, I mean, I don't know if you find Marc Maron's success obnoxious or not. Okay?
No, I don't find it obnoxious.
Okay.
So.
Now, I don't necessarily find it obnoxious. One thing I do find sort of like I just find, I don't know why I find this obnoxious, and it's sort of part, you know, you're not on Twitter, really, are you? You're not on Twitter. You don't do that.
Not at all, no.
Okay.
No.
Now, let me just tell you what I have observed on Twitter that I find sort of obnoxious is that comedians... There's this whole sort of like world in Twitter now where comedians are very earnest and very congratulatory to other people. And I think I've always just, even in person, I have, you know, it's just not my disposition to be so effusive and so earnest all the time. But on Twitter, it's like comedians have this sort of license to be really earnest. I mean, am I imagining this, Matt?
No, you're not.
And so I find it obnoxious. I just find it's like, you know, don't be so effusive. Like, that was such a wonderful sketch or whatever. Or whatever. I find it a little bit obnoxious. And you know, you're not on Twitter, so you can't really, you know, give me an opinion on whether or not you would find it obnoxious. But I get a sense you probably would a little bit, right?
I don't know, really, but, I mean, one of the joys of not being on Twitter is I'm not inundated with either minutia or things that might irritate me like that, that if I got irritated, I go, why am I being so irritated about this? I'm an adult. This shouldn't bother me. I'm acting like a child.
Right. Right. Now, to be fair,
so that doesn't happen because I'm not on Twitter.
Right. Okay. So now,
so like I'll read, or I mean, I waste time like everybody else does, but just in a different way.
Well, now I use Twitter primarily because it's like an RSS feed. I get a lot of news material that way, but I follow some comedians, and so I observe this, and it's also just a way for me to sort of keep, you know, at least abreast of what's going on in some of that world, because frankly, I'm completely out of just about every world other than sort of very narrow confines of political conversation. So I follow Richard Lewis. Richard Lewis tweets something. It says, like, I did a WTF with Marc Maron. I've never opened up like that. Wow, Marc Maron is a wonderful interviewer.
Uh-huh.
And so I just instinctively write, back to Richard Lewis, who was not writing to me, but I write back to him. I respond to him. That's
Sam. Sam, this is a monologue. It's not a dialogue. Why am I?
Well, I'm asking your opinion about it. All right, and I'm bringing this up, and you can interject at any time.
Okay, here I'll do it, and I'll go back to the what you're saying about Richard Lewis being on, and I'll start interjecting.
Okay, so I read this thing from Richard Lewis.
Uh-huh.
And it said this, and so I wrote back, this is the most offensive thing I've ever read, and particularly because it's coming from you. And so Richard Lewis writes back to me, take it easy, man. I'm praising Marin. And I wrote back, that's exactly why I'm offended. You want me to ask you the Twitter questions?
Sure.
Okay. No, I mean, it's I don't know. I guess you're not on Twitter. It's not really relevant to you. But I just I just find it a little bit annoying.
Okay.
Okay. So let's get to more important things. Ask him if he was ever sexier than he was in the morgue attendant in Men in Black. That's from Scott Falk.
Wait, was that a question or a statement? What was it? Ask him.
Have you ever been sexier than you were as the morgue attendant in Men in Black?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Richard Lewis tweeted what about Marin? Wow. That's offensive. That's offensive.
I mean, I was just joking around with him, you know, but it was sort of annoying.
Now, I get it now, Sam. I get it. I totally get it. I just signed up for Twitter while we were while you were asking me that other Twitter conversation, and I'm trying to backlog all the Twitterings I've missed, and I cannot believe what I'm seeing. This is, whoa. Oh, my God. Where have I been? I've been wasting my time by not being on Twitter and getting upset about these things. This is ridiculous. I have so much to be upset about. I've got to go back and,
come on.
This kind of time.
You still get upset by petty things. It's just different things, right?
What?
You still get upset by petty things. It's just different things. That's all.
Yeah, but what your Twitter is now an additional amount of things. It's not like it's
no,
I've cut out things. Something else.
I've cut out other things. I've cut out other things. Talking to
like
other
what?
People. I don't talk to people as much as I used to.
Like your children, Sam? Like your children.
Right?
Oh, okay. I'm just checking.
Yeah. Spend less time with the kids, and that makes me a lot less annoyed by stuff. All right, this is actually a decent question. And I'm actually curious about this. Decomposure writes, I'd like to know if there are any bits or sketches he's grown out of or feels bad about these days. I mean, obviously there were sketches that, that you've done in the past that you think are not funny now, right?
But there were some things that I thought were not funny then either. And now I'm sort of assured of it. That's a good question. It's interesting for sure. But, I have to think about that.
Are there ones that you think were just sort of like in bad taste? I mean, or I mean, surely there's stuff that you've grown out of, right? I mean, because.
Yeah, I mean, there's the sort of probably sillier base things. I mean, nothing's coming to me offhand.
That's why I was monologuing before, because I knew that if I asked you a tough question, you wouldn't be able to answer it.
I'm sure there's something I don't think there's anything that I've been ashamed of or embarrassed by in retrospect. Maybe it's more about the tone of something than, nothing that really.
What,
I mean,
too,
I still feel
too angry.
The same. Yeah, exactly. Too angry and not artful about what I was trying to say. But I certainly haven't changed my views on America or politics or religion or, you know, they've just been solidified, if anything, by examples, you know.
So you're less than hopeful these days?
Yeah, but I've always been less than hopeful. Well, that's not true. I thought I, like a lot of people, were uplifted a little bit by not necessarily Obama as a person, but the idea that, you know, the Republican guard was not in power anymore, but that obviously didn't translate to anything
substantial.
Much. Yeah, substantial. Yeah.
David Cross, Emo Prague. Do you know what that means?
Emo Prague?
Yes.
I guess like progressive rock, emo progressive rock? I don't know. I don't know what an emo prog is.
An emo prog is what you get called if you go on television and criticize President Obama. You're theoretically too emotional as a progressive by Obama supporters.
I thought it was like kind of like My Bloody Valentine meets
right.
ELP or something like that. That's just silly. And so readily and easily dismissible, it's not even worth talking about. The idea that you can't, that there's, if you criticize the Democrat in power, in this instance Obama, then there's a reason for it that's not true to the reason that you think you're criticizing him based on logic and facts and reality, but it's some sort of, psychological fault that you have that's retarded.
Yes. What has been your biggest disappointment with Obama? I didn't want to take it here, but I'm just curious.
Well, I suppose there's so many, I'll temper this answer with the fact that I know that he's a politician, and politicians have to lie, and they have to equivocate, and they have to to get elected, they have to say one thing and use kind of the soaring emotional rhetoric, and then in reality things don't work that way. I get that. I'm not naive. But the fact that he hasn't, especially now that he was elected to a second term, that he hasn't just been who we thought he was going to be, which is a guy who says this is right, this is wrong, and been a stronger proponent for marriage equality, for the ability to have make marijuana decriminalize marijuana, make it a felony, make it medical marijuana should be everywhere to the sick. The idea of continuing this drone program of being able to assassinate Americans, assassinate anybody, without due trial. There's so many.
Right.
Not really creating, strengthening the SEC and regulating banks. I mean, there's just so much. I mean, there's just constant disappointment after disappointment. And going back to what I was saying before, like, I understand he's a politician, and I just didn't know he would be this spineless.
Right.
Especially with a democratically controlled Senate. And it's shocking to me. It's the best word is disappointing.
All right. Let's move. I get some other questions. Do you remember the band, Boston band Elevator Drops? I heard you were a fan, says Joan Hager.
Oh, Oh, yeah. I think I saw elevator drops a couple times.
I don't remember them at all.
Were they Boston?
I don't remember them in Boston. Not around the time that we were there.
I thought they were Chicago, but maybe I'm confusing.
I got another good question. Somebody always wanted to ask you this. Listener Jay, you used to viciously lampoon James Lipton in your comedy. I remember that. Then you worked with him on Arrested Development. How did you get along?
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw James Lipton was on Up with Chris talking about Ebert, and it was just such a bizarre. I want to say this before you tell me whether or not you got along with it. I don't want to find out that you guys are palling around now and then have to feel awkward about saying this, so let me say it now. He read, in regards to Ebert, he read a letter that he wrote to Ebert. Which I thought was just a very strange way of sort of saying he was a great guy. Let me read what I wrote to him.
That's a very apropos of what I think of James Lipton. I will say that I think he's fantastic on the show, and I mean, he's really good. But I think he is, he's got quite an ego and a sense of self that I don't share. And I've
Look
made
who's
my
the fucking politician now, buddy.
What?
Look who's the politician now. Let's bring it.
No, I'm telling you, I've already made my feelings clear. That hasn't changed at all. My opinion of what he does and his actively seeking out fame through that is, I've already talked about that. I have disdain for that. I think that's gross. But to answer the guy's question, we got along fine. We're both professionals. There was an awkward moment where I went to his trailer and I
took a shit on his. No, God, sorry.
We're about to work with each other, so it just had to be done. So I went, introduced myself. Hi, I'm David. And I did not mention either the Mr. Show sketch or the stand up. I had no idea if he was aware of it. I would assume he was because he's the kind of guy I would imagine has like 19 variations on James Lipton on a Google alert. But we got along fine. We did this. And again, I thought it was fucking great, but it was a bit awkward and strained our meeting, but certainly civil. But then there was a very, very funny moment. The scene we were shooting was inside his character's office, the prison warden's office, and the set was, occasionally on a set, you'll construct a set within another existing set because you just don't have the space in the other place. So they made this, we're in the most cramped set possible. It's literally that size. The thing you see was, it was four walls, the guys with boom mics hanging over us, and we're just sitting there staring at each other. And we've been doing this scene for a good hour at this point. And then one of the guys, we take a break, and we're just sitting there across from each other, a foot, maybe 8-10 inches across from each other. And one of the guys goes, "Hey, Dave, my friend just turned me on to your CD, your comedy CD, Shut Up, You Fucking Baby. I hope that was really funny, man." Da, 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 da. I was like, "Oh, thanks." And then James Lipton said something that, in fact, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, "Well, I certainly hope you didn't make fun of me for, at length on that one as well." And I was like, no, that was just a one-off thing. So that was a bit awkward, but he had certainly every right to say that, and right. Worse, really, but it was fine. We had other scenes after that, and I would say it was a bit strained, but we're both pros. And
well, good for him for like sort of bringing it up in such sort of an elegant way.
Yeah. I mean,
have you had a problem with that before? I mean, I know that, I know all the Jim Belushi stuff, and as you know, Jim and
Jim Belushi did something that was really reprehensible to me, with me, involving me, and
What was it?
It's less about him as a person and what he represents. I hate that obsequious fawning over actors and this elevating them and through that elevating yourself. It's just gross to me. I don't like it.
Wait, what happened with what did Belushi do to you?
It's in the book. It's a long story. He was just such a gross, disgusting prick, and just jaw dropping. But if you want to see the story, it's in I Drink for a Reason, where I address why I have this beef with Jim Belushi, and it's a real story, and it happens exactly the way I describe it. And
I vaguely remember what it was. I mean, but my whole reason for doing that Jim Belushi show, aside from the enormous amount of money, was so that I could have some stories about Jim Belushi.
And you do have some stories.
I do. It was definitely worth it, the whole thing.
Yeah.
All I'll just tell people is that what I heard they called the scene at the end of the thing where he jumps on, where he crawls into bed with his shirt off on what's that woman's name?
Courtney Thorne Smith. Courtney Thorne Smith. Yeah.
Courtney Thorne Smith. The writers apparently called that scene the rape scene. Just horrible. I mean, you know, this is supposed to be. There's nothing that I've never seen anything that looked more wrong than a shirtless Jim Belushi.
Sam,
yeah.
I have John Benjamin. An auction, like a charity auction for some school that John's son goes to.
I think you told me. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. You probably know about this. One of the items that was bid on that he bought for me, and the bidding went like fucking crazy, but was a signed script of the very last According to Jim episode, and it is the most vainglorious ego trip where Jim ends up choking or something happens where he ends up going to St. Peter, and he has to defend his life and to see whether he's going to go to heaven or hell, and they all determine at the end of it that he's so important to these people, even though he's a goofball, that they're going to bring him back to life. He's not going to go to heaven or hell. He's actually so important. It's insane. It's crazy. Oh, God bless him. And I mean that in a literal sense.
So was there anybody else, though, that you ever had that experience with that you shat on and then ended up having to wear? Because with Belushi, of course, you had that experience, but you were like almost actively engaged in sabotaging things that he was attempting to do, as opposed to like, this is my job, I have to get along with this guy or gal.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I'll tell you one guy who was really cool Adam Levine from Maroon 5.
Uh-huh.
Years and years and years ago, I did this thing, Entertainment Weekly. It was the Grammys, and Entertainment Weekly got a bunch of disparate people, a whole bunch of, like, 10, 11, 12 people from all kind of parts of the entertainment business. And they rented a big room in a hotel in Beverly Hills, and we watched the Grammys, and it was like catered, and they had drinks and stuff, and they were encouraging us to drink. And then they were just had tape recorders and transcribing our comments. And I don't remember what I said, but I made fun of Maroon 5 pretty viciously. I think it was funny, and it was definitely a comedian's take on it, you know, but
it was
pretty harsh. And maybe a week or 2 weeks after that issue came out, I was at a bar in L.A., and there was a very long bar. It was packed, and the bartender brings over a couple shots, and says, this is from the gentleman at the bar, and I can't really see who it is, and he lifts the shot up, and he starts, I was like, oh, thanks, thank you very much. And he comes walking over, and as he comes closer, I see it's him. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I, whatever I've got coming, I deserve, you know? But he was really cool about it, and he said, hey, man, even though he said those things, you know, I'm still a fan, and we did a shot, and I thought it was very, very, very cool, you know? And I hope if I'm in that position someday, I'm that chill about it. But, yeah, I mean, it's happened a bunch. Scott Stapp, I had a Scott Stapp, who I loathe, and I hate his band and what it represents, but we had to do a
celebrity
poker game together.
What's his band?
And what?
What's his band, Scott Stapp?
Creed.
Oh, okay. And you guys had to play celebrity poker together. I hope
I'm like Bravo or an A&E or one of those type of shows. You know, for charity.
This is actually, I think, like the 1 year anniversary when I ran into you in Vegas.
That's right. Well, from when we were there for the Netflix thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're off. I didn't go because, you know, I had a kid. You know, I just had a new child.
Okay, you don't have to brag. Not an accomplishment.
No, I'm not bragging. I'm saying they've kept me from going to Vegas.
Okay.
Wow, you seem very testy about this. Are you getting a little pressure at home about having a kid?
No, not at all. I am getting pressure at home to go to Vegas, and it's really driving a wedge in our marriage.
I'm sorry to hear that.
She wants me to go to Vegas and put $1,000 down on the Braves winning the World Series. I mean, the payoff would be huge, but I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe 500, but she insists I should just get a flight, go to Vegas, just so I can put $1,000 on the Braves winning the World Series.
Well, if you need somebody to, you know, put a word in for you, let me know.
Okay.
Okay.
David. Yeah.
Gotta go.
That's the wife on the other line.
Okay. All right. Thank you for joining us. Let's try and get together for a drink this time, for serious.
For real, yeah. I'm here.
All right.
Come on.
Good. All right, good.
Give me a call.
I will.
All right.
David Cross, everybody. Thank you so much, David.
You're welcome.
Oh, okay. Thank you, David. All right, folks. Obviously, Freebie Friday today, right? Not even going to close.
Obviously. We should get to this at least one sound really quick.
Okay, yeah.
Specifically one in particular.
We'll go a little long. Just give me 1 second, folks.
Should one of us give a movie, Rick?
Oh, wow. Totally forgot about a movie recommendation. You don't want to break my flow? Yeah, let's forget it. Why, you got a movie?
When we were kings on Netflix.
When We Were Kings?
Yeah, it's a great documentary about the Ali Foreman fight in Zaire.
Yeah, I remember it. All right, fair enough.
I just saw The Man with the Iron Fists last night.
The Man with the Iron Fists.
Yeah, Reza's movie.
I look forward to seeing that.
Reza Aslan has a movie?
No.
Okay.
Reza from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay, sorry. Right. That's weird, isn't it? Like, just how sort of out of
I really thought you were joking.
No.
I thought that was, I was like, oh, that's funny.
No, I know Reza Aslan. I thought he did one maybe about a documentary about Iran. I didn't know. All right, folks. You know, a lot of people say Republicans, you know, they just deny the idea of man-made climate change. They're not coming around. But, you know, Smokey Joe Barton. Oh, I should mention he's a Republican. A congressman who is he the chair of the Energy Committee from Texas? He certainly sits on it. He is a Republican. There's a reason why they call him Smokey Joe. And it's not because he smokes a lot. It's because he is one of the biggest recipients of fossil fuel lobbying money and carbon-based energy lobbying money of anyone in Congress. And has, I don't know if they rate him, but he would have an A rating.
He is going to explain to you exactly why there is some confusion about the science behind climate change, folks. Listen carefully here.
Recognize the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Barton, for 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it's a secret that I'm a proponent and supporter of the Keystone Pipeline, so it's somewhat redundant for me to ask too many questions. So I would point out, though, that people like me that support hydrocarbon development don't deny.
Now, you got to say, you got to give it up for him. At least he's being obvious. Now, they call him Smokey Joe, and I don't know if that's written in front of his little placard in Congress as he's holding these hearings on Keystone. But so, you know, credit for that. And he's gonna put up his best argument. Go ahead.
Don't deny that the climate is changing. I think you could have an honest difference opinion on what's causing that change without automatically being either all in that it's all because of mankind or it's all just natural. I think there is a divergence of...
The point isn't whether or not you can have a difference of opinion about this. That's not what the difference of opinion is about. The difference of opinion is, am I going to listen to the vast majority, the 95% of climate scientists around the world who are saying that this is man-made or not? That's the opinion. That's the binary choice here. We can all have opinions as whether or not this is that, but it's just basically, this is not like I prefer the Red Sox. I prefer the Texas Rangers. This is whether or not I'm going to believe the scientists or decide not to. And then my rationales for both of those.
Maybe the opinion here is to not listen to the facts.
Yeah, but that's like a predisposition. That's not even an opinion. I'm going to think that science is bunk. But wait a second, let's let him talk.
Evidence. I would point out that if you're a believer in the Bible, one would have to say the Great Flood is an example of climate change. And that certainly wasn't because mankind had overdeveloped hydrocarbon energy.
All right, so there you have it. Because one of the things, in my opinion, that I'm skeptical about what the scientists say, because if you happen to believe in the Bible like I do, in the Great Flood when Noah had his ark, that was probably climate change. The climate changed, and I don't think that was because people were driving too many cars.
The proof is right there. It's in a book.
He's got such a almost Cheshire grin on his face, though. Pure cynicism.
I can't believe I'm saying this. And what I really can't believe is it's going to work. It's going to work with my constituency.
It's total, like, not bad work if you can find it.
Yeah, I can't believe I get away with this. I almost feel like, am I mocking myself by even sort of being trying to analyze that statement? Am I mocking myself by saying, you know, let's stipulate the Great Flood happened.
And that ark did exist.
And let's stipulate the ark did exist. I know that they may have found it somewhere in the who knows.
And that one of every animal.
And
was...
so one of every animal's on. And let's just stipulate that it was climate change. Obviously, if you have a massive flood, the climate has changed in some respects. Is it possible, I would ask Joe Barton, if we were actually to have a serious conversation about this where he wasn't going like, come on, Sam. Not really. I mean, come on now. Is it possible that it was just sort of more localized than maybe the people writing this story in the Bible were aware of at the time? Like maybe the phone lines were down and they didn't know that, you know, in other parts of the world, this wasn't happening. And they just assumed, like when they referred to the world, they were really just talking about a very small region that may have flooded. Well, Sam, that's your opinion. And we could never know.
Actually, he'd probably say, well, Sam, I can't believe you thought about it that much.
Exactly. Well, Sam, I am mighty disappointed in you.
What are you doing? Don't you got some Twitter wars to fight?
You're supposed to be an educated modern man, Sam. You know, yeah. David Cross, for crying out loud.
My God, what an a-hole you just made yourself look like taking me seriously, Sam. God. All right. Let's listen to some sound that is sure to be more encouraging in many respects. This is...
For a second, I thought you were going to talk about the Limbaugh, and I was like, no, what?
Not quite. We'll get to the Limbaugh, but here is Elizabeth Warren. Now, you know the story of this. The OCC, basically, one of the primary mortgage lender regulators, basically got this mortgage lender fraud as part of their portfolio. Many people say they were aggressive in pursuing it because they didn't want it to end up in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's portfolio, because the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was not so rife and not so tainted, frankly, by industry that they would actually pursue this mortgage fraud in a far more aggressive way. So the OCC fashions some type of a mortgage deal that is signed off on by all the state's attorney generals that gives a just literally virtually no money. Chris Hayes did a report on this the other day. Just like incredibly small amounts of money to people whose homes were foreclosed upon, either completely illegally, despite actually being up to date with payments, because they were victims of some type of mortgage fraud, that there was no legitimate claim to foreclosing on these houses because they had people lied on affidavits as to whether or not they had the right to foreclose. So the OCC hires private, essentially, examiners who had, in many instances, worked for the same companies that perpetrated the fraud to examine whether or not these homeowners deserved any payments, gave them a payment that actually represented a fraction of what these private consultants got for making that determination. And now the OCC is sitting on this bank of data that shows which one of these institutions committed fraud, in what way, et cetera, et cetera. And they are refusing up to now to make that information known to the public. Now, of course, the banks did not get any type of civil protection. And when the government finds information generally in criminal investigations, even that they have settled, they release this information. That's why we see all these security suits that are taking place, private security suits. Although much of that, frankly, has also come from we've seen the information go the opposite direction. Government picking up suits based upon private litigators' works. But nevertheless, so here is Elizabeth Warren asking the OCC regulators, where's this information? Why are you denying the public this information? Are you going to reverse that decision? Here it is.
You now have evidence in your files of illegal activity, I take it, for some of these banks. I get that from the evidence you've released about the charts, who's going to get paid what. So if someone believes that they have been illegally foreclosed against, will they still have a right under this settlement to bring a lawsuit against the bank?
Yes.
All right. Now, if a family wants to bring the lawsuit, you're both lawyers, would it be helpful, if you're going against one of these big banks, would it be helpful for these families to have the information about their case that's in your files? Mr. Yes. Ashton?
It would be helpful, obviously, to have information related to the injury. Yes, it would.
Okay. So do you plan to give the families this information. That is, those families that have been victims of illegal foreclosures, will you be giving them the information that's in your possession about how the banks illegally foreclosed against them? Mr. Ashton?
I think that's a decision that we're still considering. We haven't made a final decision yet.
So you have made a decision to protect the banks, but not a decision to tell the families who were illegally foreclosed against?
We haven't made a decision about what information we would provide to individuals. That's true, yes.
Mr. Stepano?
In the same position.
So I just want to make sure I get this straight. Families get pennies on the dollar in this settlement for having been the victims of illegal activities or mistakes in the bank's activities. You let the banks, and you now know individual cases where the banks violated the law, and you're not going to tell the homeowners, or at least it's not clear yet whether or not you're going to do that.
We haven't made a decision on what we're going to tell the homeowners.
You know, I just have to say, I thought this was about transparency. That's what this is all about. People want to know that their regulators are watching out for the American public, not for the banks. And the only way that we can evaluate whether or not you're doing your job is if you make some of this information publicly available. And so far, you're not doing that. And without transparency, we can't have any confidence either in your oversight or that the markets are functioning properly at all. So, and that people are going to receive proper compensation for what went wrong.
It's jaw-dropping. Can you imagine, even for a moment, a district attorney saying, yeah, all this evidence about criminal wrongdoing. We're not going to talk about it. We're not going to bring it up. We're not going to let the public know about it.
Because it would be like a market burden on the criminals.
The argument is that this will give away trade secrets.
That's literally the
That's
point.
What their argument is. This is just unbelievable. I'll tell you. I mean, if I was Senator Warren, I would have just said, excuse me, will you just repeat exactly everything we just said here again?
Five times?
Like, you know, the fact that she was speaking, they were just going like, oh, thank God she's not asking this anymore. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I can't believe these people get in front of the committee and have the balls to even show their face.
I would love to hear that conversation in your words. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, are you effing kidding me?
Repeat what you just said. I'm going to make you say it 100 times. If I didn't get you up here to write it on the blackboard. We don't know yet if we're going to do. Really? Just unbelievable. I don't even know what to say.
What we thought is that if we arrested this drug running ring, that would unfairly disclose where they got their products from in Latin America and jeopardize their long-term supply chain.
Right.
So we're just going to hang out on that.
I think it's actually probably like what it could do is it could jeopardize the parts of their businesses that are actually legal.
The pizza place that they wash the money through. Well, if you go up to the cocaine, what think about Nino's?
Right. I mean, what's going to happen to them?
How do you think they got their dollar pizzas? What do you think subsidizing that?
All right. There you go. Probably true, right? All right. We got one more sound clip, and then I'll take a couple IMs. Matt and Michael successfully covered, I think, Rand Paul's little jaunt yesterday to Howard University. However, Rush Limbaugh has added a little cherry on top, ladies and gentlemen. You see, what Rand Paul did was wrong in Rush Limbaugh's eyes, not because he tried to have a gotcha moment about who started the National Advancement for Colored
NAACP.
People, and not because he went on to say, what was the other thing that he thought he was being clever about? I can't remember what it was. Not because he lied about his equivocating about the Civil Rights Act that had, you know, was literally there were tapes of. No, it was because he went there and, listen.
Rand Paul went to Howard University. It's a black college. He made a speech there this morning, actually, and it's in the Washington Examiner. It says that Rand Paul reached out to blacks, arguing that the Democrats and Obama have failed African Americans. He also admitted that Republicans have a long way to go before blacks see Republicans as their guide to success. That's, no, they don't. That's just a matter of opening your eyes. What do the Republicans have to do? Prove a negative? Prove they're not racist? How do you, it's not possible.
Now you got to hand it to Limbaugh. It's an interesting admission. It's not possible for Republicans to prove they're not racist. How do you prove a negative? How do you prove it? Well, you know what you could prove? You could prove that you do not support policies that necessarily hurt African Americans. Or you could also sort of try and stereotype things like welfare queens. And you could also not try and demonize the president because he's black. That would be starters.
You know, they ask us to prove the negatives all the time in everything. Think about it. Creationism, when it comes to those people.
Prove
it doesn't exist.
I mean, you know, there seems to be a lot of people who can prove that they're not racist, or at least just don't engage in racist speech or policies. I mean, there you go. Continue.
Clarence Thomas, Thomas Sowell, Shelby Steele, there's all kinds of role models. What do you mean the Republicans have a long way to go? I know why he said it, but they don't.
Wait a second. So he lists off three black people who are Republicans and says, we got role models.
To be honest, Rush Limbaugh has listed off three black people before, and Clarence Thomas is always on that list, so he really only knows.
But that's not even the point. It's just sort of like, what does that prove? What is that supposed to prove?
Have a long way to go. To me, the onus is on black people to get it straight. The onus is on the black population to see the truth. The onus is always on Republicans or always on conservatives to somehow prove that they're not what the Democrats accuse them of being. How in the world can you ever do that? How can you go to Howard University? I'm not a racist. When you show up at the NAACP, I'm not a racist. You can't. It's a lose-lose proposition.
Now, to be fair, I think this is not necessary. It could have been a win proposition because we've seen Mitt Romney, what the conservative base always loves is to watch a white guy go in there. Now, it could have been, if Rand Paul's plan had worked, everybody would have raised their hands at Howard University and go, the Democrats founded it. The Democrats founded it. And then he could have said, no. It was the Republican Party. Have I blown your minds? And then then Rush Limbaugh would have played that 5,000 times over and over again. It's just that Rand Paul's stupid plan, assuming that people at one of the most prestigious universities in the country knew nothing about their history.
To be fair to Rand Paul, he didn't show up and went, who let the dogs out?
So it can be win for those conservatives, just not with their audience that they're talking to. It's with their audience at home, which is what it was all about in the first place.
Did I just blow your mind?
Did I just blow your mind? Let's go a couple items before we go for the day. R. Fain, in the current debate on gun legislation, why hasn't anybody mentioned that right after the Gabby Gifford shooting, Peter King wanted to make it illegal to knowingly carry a gun within 1,000 feet of certain high-profile government officials? I don't know. A Square, hello, Majority Report, not listening live, but hoping Sam's feeling better about the Iron Lady. Her views about government and society distilled very clearly in her October 1987 speech to the Parliament. An interview that year, she did not believe in society and in government as a force to support it. Good time to listen to Sam's shows and exchange with Matt about the London riots.
Jeez, that's going back.
Going back sometime. Hold on. Put my thing down for a second.
You went way back in the archives there. See, folks, you could just go on back, and that's back in 2011. Jeez.
Back up. There's a clear thread between Thatcher's policies and austerity that's being force-fed in Europe and the U.S. Indeed. Jay Tingle, another question. Has David spent any time with his wife's Uncle Larry? I don't even know what that means. 1001. Sam, Michael, and Matt, you need to get the help from Twit and Leo Laporte about your phone system having problems. Although Leo Laporte doesn't have as many problems when he does his radio show for Premier Radio, because Premier Radio has full-time engineers on staff making sure their shows and audio are working perfectly.
Oh, that little nugget of information.
Yes. It's weird, but maybe I should just be using the Skype phone all the time. The quality of Cross sounded better to me on the Google voice, right? The first time we were talking to him, but he couldn't hear me as well.
That's weird, because Google voice has been working great for years. We've been using it, right?
Well, but no, people have complained intermittently.
Really?
I don't know why that would be. I mean, theoretically, that would be the upload speeds. But our upload speeds are supposed to be good. But I can use the Skype. It's just not. Skype is just not as good.
If it was the upload speeds, it wouldn't matter what you're using. If everything we were using in this office remained the same, that extra whatever it was would still be that extra whatever it was.
When it's getting to him, I mean, we would have the same problem on Skype as we would have on Google Voice. Well, let's have this conversation afterwards.
Maybe people find it interesting.
I just think that if it was a local problem in terms of getting the information into my computer, we would have the same problem on Skype as we would on Google Voice.
Maybe it's just a problem on Google's end of things with Google Voice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a free service. They've been extending that freebie for years now.
Yeah. Sagita, police in schools equals more kids in court. While schools may bring in police officers to provide security, officers end up handling discipline and handing out charges of disorderly conduct or assault. There's been a surge of arrests or misdemeanor charges for essentially nonviolent behavior that sends them into criminal courts. Interesting. Yes, the one of the problems with sending cops into schools ostensibly to protect the kids is that it starts to criminalize everything. Jabbles, 1001, FDA finds mold in sterile compound pharmacies. This kind of like the time the med tech company I work at found mold in warehouses housing sterile equipment. Free market will take care of it. Indeed. Pluger, Margaret Thatcher-related Netflix streaming movie, Brassed Off. Oh, yes, good idea. Left Coast Marcus, sad news, Jonathan Winters dead at 87. That is sad. Oh, we didn't do our Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Oh, let's get to it right now.
Let's do it.
Almost forgot. Here we go. It's called Pissed Off Old Folks.
Pissed Off Old Folks.
Joe CPI.
Hey, Obama. Don't you care about the old folks?
No CPI.
Obamacare. Cuts to Medicare.
Dagone it.
Even though they were explained as improvements to efficiency.
Hogwash.
Were easily perceived by the elderly as
hogwash.
Cuts to the benefits that they'd receive, especially considering that many find what Medicare gives them already to be stingy.
Freaking Obama.
Obama, man.
Hey, Obama.
Now I hear you talk about cuts to Social Security.
Obama.
Them old folks like him, her, and you and me getting...
Dang
we're getting
it.
Pissed off
dang
old
it.
Folks.
God dang it.
Pissed
dang
off
it.
Old folks.
God dang it.
Pissed
dang
off
it.
Old folks rule this country.
God dang it.
They rule.
God dang
rule
it. Dang
this
it.
Country.
God dang it.
Look out for those pissed off old folks.
Dang it.
Wow, I don't know what to say. That was comedic stylings. You were wrong about those Medicare cuts, though, I should tell you. They were basically cuts to providers and Medicare Advantage. And basically that was a sort of an adjunct privatized part of Medicare. And Medicare has very, far more efficient cost controls for its regular Medicare. And they simply applied those to Medicare Advantage and found that they were overpaying for all sorts of services that they, so they just simply changed that down statutorily to rates that they pay for Medicare and got those savings. But aside from that, it's fine. Final IMs of the day is Jimmy Reefer Cake, who also provided us with the songs for today. Dude, I emailed you a song. Listen to it. It's about the CPI and Obama and the old folks. Michael's comment about Obamacare and the 2010 election disaster helped inspire this one. Wrong? Impossible. I was not wrong about the perception of how it was used in 2010. Indeed, I stand corrected. That is how it was used in 2010. But look, you know, at the end of the day, not so much the it motivated the definitely the Republican base that he was cutting Medicare. It was other things, I think, that depressed the Democratic turnout, and it's going to happen again. It really is. All right, folks.
Jimmy, next Friday is April 19th. I expect a truly epic song for 419 because of the following days.
Oh, right.
I expect something incredible.
Yeah, it should be amazing. You better put some work into this. All right, let's take two more IMs. Morella, Jimmy Reefer Cake's offering was great today, as usual. Got a Loudon Wainwright feel, don't you think? Yeah, fair enough. Sunday Nista. Sammy, sorry to say, but your conflict with Marin's success nearly ruined the Cross interview. In other news, what do you think of All In Chris? What do you mean nearly ruined the Cross interview? Yeah, I thought it might
There would be no Majority Report if it wasn't for Sam complaining about Marin's success.
Oh, of course.
It's a major staple of the show. It's a pillar.
I brought it out. Cross didn't want to talk about it. That's fine.
Marin's success is the cultural equivalent of the Simpson Bowles letter.
That's right.
It's like
a... I have not been able to watch as much All In Chris as I want to. I mean, I think overall, I've seen some great panels. I've seen some other panels that I feel like needed more time. And I don't know. It may be too ambitious to have that many panels.
What? Did you just call it All In Chris?
All In with Chris. Oh, sorry. Okay. I mean, it may be that they need to, like, have three longer panels instead of four panels. But I haven't watched it enough to really sort of break it down in that way. So, basically, I've just been too sick and the baby and whatnot. But
as odd as it sounds, catching an 8 o'clock in the 8 p.m. show is a lot harder than catching an 8 a.m. show.
Yes. For me, I don't know what it is. And maybe it's just because I got out of the rhythm.
There's a lot of things going on in your personal life when you get home from work Monday through Friday.
Yes.
And on top of that, there's a lot more competition of other shows and things going on TV.
Well, that doesn't happen with me. I mean, if I was watching TV, I'd be watching it. But the problem is that Myla goes to bed between 8 and 8:30. And then it usually takes her another half hour to fall asleep. And then with Saul, we're juggling these things, and so I don't get to watch it. And so I could DVR it, but then I'm watching it from 9 to 10, and I don't have time to do any work. And then I got to get to bed too late, and then it all screws everything up. So, but we'll work it out. If I can just get Milo to go to sleep soon, what we need to do is just get a...
Why don't you push her nap time back as she's getting older? Maybe make it after All In with Chris. Maybe make it at 9.
Her bedtime.
That's what I said, didn't I?
You said nap time, but well, then what am I going to do?
Well, a nap is basically it.
Sleep
is basically
Nikki won't go for that.
Prolonged nap.
All right, long doggy. Streaming video is using your upstream bandwidth and it's competing with your phone. It could be anything that's going out. Skype may use a different compression. It's definitely a bandwidth problem.
We upped that bandwidth, though.
We upped it as big as we could. It's very robust, and I've plugged this computer in, so it's not even fighting over the Wi-Fi. So I don't know what it is. Fry Pop Phil, final IM of the day. The only people that got any settlement at all was Bo Biden. Requirement of the settlement, the military family to get $125,000 plus cost. Indeed. All right, folks. Oh. David Cross took your Marin rant and kicked it through the goalpost. Good setup, said Jay Tingle. Indeed. Yes, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Just a heads up. I don't know what's going to happen, but in the coming week, I believe, I'm going to have to take a couple of days off for a friend's family's funeral. So I don't know when that's going to happen. I've got to help out with this. You will be in good hands when that happens with Matt and Mike.
With who?
With Matt and Mike.
Okay.
Who did I say?
You said like Maya and Mike.
With Maya and Mike.
Yeah, Maya will be coming. Sorry, bro. Yeah. You're not, yeah. Maya's coming in.
We got people were a little complaining about too much testosterone. As it were. But so, I mean, that may happen Monday. It may happen later in the week, but I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. I apologize. I want to get back onto a regular schedule, but it just will not happen until after this. So have a great weekend. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out.